Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
I'm profoundly saddened to stand before you today to report that 18 people lost their lives and 13 people injured in last night's attacks. In memory of those we lost and in honor of those who were injured, President Biden and I have ordered all U.S. flags and State of Maine flags to be lowered to half staff immediately for the next 5 days. Maine State Police have issued a shelter-in-place order for Lewiston, Lisbon, and Bowdoin, as the manhunt for that person of interest, Robert Card of Bowdoin, continues.
So horrible news coming out of Maine last night. I know you've been watching all of the developments of it. This horrific shooting that took place, mass casualty incident involving a 40-year-old. I don't like to say their names or show their photos because there are numerous studies that underscore the science that it inspires copycat behavior, for the lack of a better way to put it. But just horrific because there's so far 18 fatalities, many who are injured, and they've already issued charges. I think there's only 8 charges at this point because they said they're still identifying some of the victims. They're still confirming the identity of some of the victims. Just absolutely horrific. And this individual, this 40-year-old, is still on the run. I've got a million questions, and I watched the press conference just a little bit earlier, and I have even more questions. One of the questions that I had involved mental health. So first off, welcome to the program. You can listen to the nationally syndicated radio show around the country. Follow us on Substack as well. I send out stuff there regularly. The issue with this individual, by all reports, and I saw this circulating last night, but I always like to wait until it's actually confirmed before I, you know, either go to air with it or, you know, share it online. So the individual, the language is very tricky, the way that it's all written. It is that he was committed to a mental institution just this summer. So just months ago, he was committed to a mental institution. Now, they didn't say he was admitted. They said he was committed. And when they say he's committed, that makes me think that it was an involuntary commitment. That is one thing that law enforcement did not speak to earlier today when they were taking questions on it. And the reason why that is incredibly important is because under 18 U.S.C. subsection 922G subsection 4, he would be a prohibited possessor. If you are involuntarily committed to a mental institution, you are rendered a prohibited possessor. And so the press conference, they've had several press conferences. They had one, you heard the governor as we were coming in, Janet Mills there in Maine. There was one with law enforcement. There was another one where they had FBI FBI spoke with that. Then they had one that was just hospital healthcare, talking about treatments of the victims. But the reason I focus and I stop right there on the involuntary commitment is because that would have made him a prohibited possessor. And I think it's, first off, it's important to establish that. But secondly, we don't know when and where he purchased his firearms. We don't know if they were all purchased legally. Nobody has any idea. It's all speculation at this point. So you can't even go and say, well, then did he purchase legally? Because nobody knows. Nobody knows the timeline on that. Again, this is why we have an investigation. And this is why trying to figure things out in the court of public opinion can be, you know, incredibly difficult. But a lot of questions. Apparently, he also made threats previously to shoot up his National Guard base in Maine. Now, that's a criminal act. You can't threaten to shoot something up. I mean, there's free speech. Free speech doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means that there's not going to be any protection for you to shelter you from the consequences of engaging in that action. So he apparently had made repeated threats. He made threats to shoot up his base. Was this before or after? And this was according to the Maine Information and Analysis Center, in a bolo that was sent out. He had been committed, it said, to a mental health facility during summer of 23. He was subsequently released, and that he had made threats. He was apparently a trained firearms instructor, believed to be in the Army Reserve, stationed out of Maine, and they're still looking for him. I can't believe, I mean, I just don't know why it's so difficult to find this guy. Apparently, he was an outdoorsman. There's, you know, a number of things with this, but if he had been adjudicated mentally unfit, I think that's important. I'm curious, was he, and if he was adjudicated, because it said he heard voices. They said that he heard voices. I mean, it sounds like he could be potentially schizophrenic. What kind of medication was he on? Was he under some kind of current treatment? Was he on a current treatment plan? What is that? Who was seeing him? In Maine, they don't have red flag laws. They have what they call yellow flag laws. And in Maine, it's different in that the only individual that can enact that is law enforcement. So, but that does not, that does not mean that there aren't routes open for individuals if they see someone dangerous and they want to make them move legally in a court of law, because due process is important if you're talking about removing someone's natural rights. That doesn't mean that there were not opportunities open or roads open to, you know, family members or work associates for them to have him adjudicated what is the legal term, mental defective. So, a lot of questions about this. How long ago did he threaten to shoot up the base? That's the other thing. I mean, how long ago did he threaten to do it? I'm just curious. But that has not stopped the usual suspects from immediately going after Susan Collins, the senator of Maine, going after her, going after every single person out there, talking about how we need an assault weapons ban, et cetera, et cetera. There have been people who've been going after the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, because Mike Johnson was against the establishment of a national registry, which is what they call, quote unquote, universal background checks, because we have background checks. But quote unquote, universal background checks means that you have to have a registry of every single firearm that a person owns. And in order to even pass something like that, you would have to undo existing federal law, which prohibits establishing a national database using any kind of NICS information. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff here, a lot of questions. And it's you have individuals who are calling for the establishment of laws that would have had absolutely no impact here. I will say that just right out of the gate, looking at what is publicly available, looking at what has been reported, I get some really eerie Sutherland Springs vibes from this, meaning you all remember the story of Sutherland Springs. In fact, the hero of that story, Stephen Williford, is a very good friend of mine, a dear friend, and he was the one who used his AR-15, and he's a firearms instructor, and he stopped a mass murderer. But in Sutherland Springs, this individual, it was a 26-year-old, it was considered one of the deadliest mass casualty incidents in the United States. This individual, he had a lengthy record. He had all kinds of, he had violent behavior. In fact, he had been court-martialed on domestic violence. He had numerous domestic violence. He had a domestic violence conviction. And he only had one charge. It was a weapons charge related to a 2012 incident, in which case that had been dropped. But technically, he was a prohibited possessor. But the reason that this individual in Sutherland Springs was able to obtain his firearm is because the Air Force at the time did not report his disqualifying record to NICS. They did not report. And see, this is what I've brought up. you can have a separate conversation about whether or not you think the background check system is either constitutional or works. That's separate from me saying all of the leftists out there who scream about expanding the system, what they do not do, because I feel like they want the system to fail, is they don't tell you that states are not actually they're not required to report everything. So it's like they and Democrats have not lifted a finger to change that, by the way, which is exactly what you would do if you would want the system to fail, and you would want to and then turn around and argue that there's no way to be able to have a, you know, buying and selling a firearm safely. So as a result, we've got to ban them for everybody except criminals, apparently. That's exactly what you would do if that was the position that you held. So There's a lot of people who are immediately moving on that. I get it from people who say, Dana, the timing's weird, because literally just yesterday, Kamala Harris was out there saying that, oh, well, the assault weapons ban, we have to pass that. I will say she has been tweeting that regularly, literally like twice a week. Democrats go back to that and they throw it out there because it's a red meat platitude for them. The assault weapons ban previously did not work at all whatsoever. In fact, I'm not just saying that. Barack Obama's Department of Justice said that. The RAND Institute, a far left think tank, also said that. There have been numerous surveys from Democrat criminal researchers that have also come to that same conclusion, because all it did was just ban the attachment of three or more cosmetics onto a specific rifle. It just changed, you know, the cosmetics of it. It didn't actually do anything. In fact, you had gang violence increase and Columbine happened, and it didn't do anything with the majority of mass casualties or with the majority of gun homicides across the country being perpetrated with illegally possessed handguns by and large prohibited possessors and always in commission of felonious activity. So all of this is to say that there's a lot of questions out there to be asked. This guy is still on the run. And I made the point earlier, I think it's weird that authorities can't answer right away the question about his mental defectiveness or prior adjudication, because it's going to be something that's easy to look up and answer. And I know people like point out HIPAA and things like that. But at this point, this is an actual investigation, and I understand with HIPAA, but at the same time, it's just weird to me because that hasn't come into play prior. I mean, the fact that he was already adjudicated, or that he was already committed to an institution, that by itself is a violation of HIPAA, which then, you can't even share that much information. So you understand what I'm saying. It's almost like they answer the question by saying they can't answer it right now, but people have gone out and said, well, it could have been, you know, they can't actually come out with this information because of HIPAA. Well, then why did they come out with just that much information? Why was that much released? None of that makes sense. Was he under current care? I mean, that much you can say. So, I mean, it's unbelievable, seeing this, but, like I said, I mean, it's horrible whenever you have these tragedies, because people always go back to these things that never work. In addition to this, and as I said earlier, I wanted to pull this up because I made the comment earlier that it's wild to me that in the same people who are saying that, we have to immediately ban this, we have to ban that, etc. The left is trying to use this involuntarily committed murderer who previously threatened to shoot up his base as some sort of impetus to disarm the innocent, after many of these exact same people spent the last 2 weeks defending Hamas, who would love to do the same thing to people here. And speaking of Hamas and Israel, we have all the latest on that as more incursions up in the north. We'll keep you updated. We have the latest on the House as well. Now that there's a Speaker of the House, what are they going to do? We have the college campus stuff. There's a lot to hit today, and a tragic day coming out of Maine. And we're going to bring you all of the latest as well. We've got headlines on the way.
What happens when we die? From Angel Studios, the force behind Sound of Freedom and The Chosen, comes an unprecedented deep dive into the phenomena of near-death experiences in the new movie After Death. After Death makes a courageous venture into a hotly debated, mysterious subject by comparing near-death experience with cutting-edge scientific knowledge. Hear from experts in the fields of science, philosophy, and medicine, as well as firsthand experiences of people who have lived through death as they paint a fascinating picture of life in the next realm. This groundbreaking project responds to the soul's innate desire to find meaning in life and solace in the future. Come see it for yourself or pay it forward by providing a free ticket for others to see the film. Leave your preconceptions at the door and prepare for a never-before-seen glimpse into what the next life could entail in After Death, opening October 27th. Get your tickets today or pay it forward at angel.com/Dana. That's angel.com/Dana. After Death, the end is only the beginning. Rated PG-13.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I can remember, I don't know if you remember, but actually in an interview I did with WHO 13, I read some actual excerpts from the book. It was All Boys Aren't Blue. Actually read them, and you all couldn't even show that portion of the interview without a disclaimer, and still didn't show it because you were uncomfortable. The media was uncomfortable with saying that on TV. But yet, somebody believes that our kids should be subjected to that. You know, I'm a grandma, I was a parent. I think moms and grandmas and just, they want their kids to get a good education. They want them to be able to read. They want them to be able to do math, science, civics, really understand what the history of this country is, good and bad.
This is Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, who's mad because she was asked a question about banned books from reporters. She didn't take too kindly to it. I don't think a lot of governors are. They're kind of fed up with being asked these questions about stuff. I mean, having pornographic materials in their schools. Apparently the Beatles are dropping a final single, Now and Then, remix from John Lennon's 1978 song. That's like one of their, I think it's like their first and final new track. Are people going to go crazy over that? I don't know. Studies say listening to your favorite songs can reduce pain. They can also cause it, depending on if it's fake punk Green Day. The loneliness epidemic. Nearly one in four adults feel lonely because people need to go out and touch grass. Everyone is so concerned about living their lives online. And social media, I think, is one of the worst things to ever affect a weak and stupid humanity. 92% of American adults say they prefer to date people who've been to therapy, a survey shows. What does that say about the adults surveyed? I think you... Halloween pumpkin horror unfolds on a California freeway. KTLA says that cleanup crews had to deal with smashed jack-o'-lanterns early Wednesday morning. It was a semi-truck carrying a load of pumpkins, and it caught fire. But I bet it smelled really good. You know, it smelled like a giant, candle up on that road. Pumpkin spice. You guys know it. Stick with us. All of the latest, the tragedy in Maine, Israel, and more.
So many of America's colleges and universities today are less concerned with critical thinking than with indoctrination. So it's no wonder that so many young Americans embrace cancel culture or deny free speech to conservatives and celebrate terrorism. I'm happy to report that there is an American college where students debate ideas openly and honestly, where they pursue truth together with their professors, and where America's great heritage of liberty is studied and revered, Hillsdale College. Hillsdale College continues its original mission of offering the kind of serious liberal arts education needed to preserve the blessings of civil and religious liberty across the land. At Hillsdale College, students grow in heart and mind by studying timeless truths in a supportive, dedicated community. To learn more about the mission of Hillsdale College, visit Dana4FORHillsdale.com. There you will find a short video showing you how Hillsdale's work is effective in defending American liberty, not only on its Michigan and Washington, D.C. campuses, but across the nation. Take some time to watch today at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, improving hearts.
Looking for the drive-through version of the Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from the Dana Show.
Mika, that Iran has complicity here across the board. They've been supporting groups like Hamas and Hezbollah for years. They're supporting these militia groups in Iraq and Syria that have attacked our troops in recent days. And that's what the direction and facilitation of the IRGC. So we have sent a strong signal to everybody in the region, including Iran, that we don't want to see escalation of this conflict, and that we have significant national security interests at stake, let alone the protection of our troops that are in places like Iraq and Syria. And we're going to take those responsibilities seriously. We're going to act, and we're going to make sure we have the capabilities to do so, to defend those interests.
So that's John Kirby talking about some of the latest with regards to Iran and Israel, because there. I mean, I think it's at this point. Why are we pretending that they're not behind like absolutely every single thing? Welcome to the nationally syndicated radio show. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen coast to coast as well. Find us YouTube and Facebook. So the situation here with all of this, some of the latest, pulling all this up. We've got some technical difficulty. I got headphones breaking. I got all kinds of stuff. All hell's all breaking loose. This is what happens when you have a skeleton crew. And Juan and Kane, God love you. And Steve, you guys do the best. So the latest with this, as it relates to if there's going to be any kind of ground invasion, we told you yesterday about how it seemed like, according to the Wall Street Journal, they were acting like, oh, it might kind of be the United States that's slowing things up because we apparently didn't have all our defenses necessary ready. And that's not a great thing. It's not a great thing at all to have that happen because we don't have the cover. We don't have the air cover. We had our assets in Kuwait. We had our assets in Iraq. We have our assets everywhere else. And then to not have that ready to go is, you know, it's kind of to not be ready for that made me wonder how that kind of got out, too. Like, who was it that leaked that out? Was there somebody that leaked that out? I don't know. So that's some of the latest with it. Some of the other things that we're looking at is, well I'll get it because nothing's much changed. We got all the situation with the House, too. We have a new Speaker of the House. All this stuff. We're going to talk about all of that. But in the meantime, we've also been following this story coming out of Maine that has to do with the mass casualty incident there. And I would imagine that because they have a massive manhunt under massive. I'm just trying to wrap my brain around the fact that this guy's still on the run. How does that get away? How does that guy get away? He went to three different places. How do you get away? I mean, people called police. How does this guy get away? $1 million question. How does this guy get away? I have no, you what? You were you going to type? Were you going to say something? I have no, I mean, they have, I'm just like, you can, all the technology that we have available, and how long until we hear that this guy is going to have been on the radar somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's a concern enough for Lewiston Police Chief to say, you know, be mindful of your own personal safety.
Yeah, they've had people like shit, but they don't, I don't even know, it sounds like they don't even think that he's there anymore. Yeah, it sounds like they don't even necessarily think that he's there. Because they said, oh, he's got a boat, and they were looking at waterways and all this other stuff. So he may not even be there anymore. But he had been committed. I'm just like looking over some of the stuff that we already know. He had been previously committed to a mental institution. They use the word committed and not admitted. Is interesting to me because that signals that it was involuntary. That makes somebody prohibited possessor, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to know how long he had been struggling mental health wise. I want to know how long he had been struggling. I want to know how long he was he on medications. What kind of medication was he on? All of that stuff. I mean, I think that's all important to know. And also, we just literally went through 2 weeks where we watched people be executed, you know, in Israel by a terror group, and people who were unarmed and they were attacked and targeted by a terror group. Hamas would love to do to us here what this mass murderer did. And now you've got the same people that were defending Hamas calling for the disarmament of innocent people here because a criminal madman went on a murder spree and horrifically in Maine. That just makes me want to buy more guns. It just makes me want to buy more guns. That's all I mean, it's... I'm looking at all this, and it's the same people. It's the same people. And I've just, like I said, we got a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions we got to ask. A lot of questions to ask. There's just a lot. And so hopefully we'll find out more. But this dude is still on the run. He's considered armed and dangerous. So, I mean, we'll see. This is just, it's sad. And some of the laws in Maine, as I said, they have a yellow... They don't have a red flag law. They have what they call a yellow flag, basically. And police have to take that off. But there's still a number of different ways that individuals, if it's someone in your family, if it's somebody you work with, that you know that they're on the struggle bus mental health-wise and they're a danger to themselves or others, there's, you know, a number of things that people can do in order to take action on that. And if someone needs to be adjudicated mentally defective, that's a legal term, then they can be such. So that's the law in Maine. Now we'll bring you up to date with all of that here as I'm sure we're, I just still can't believe this guy's on the run. It makes me think that he's hiding out in the woods somewhere. If they can't find him, they think that he may have switched cars. There was something either there were reports on that. Maybe he switched cars, et cetera, et cetera. But we'll see. IDF had conducted a raid in Gaza in the last, overnight, I guess you could say, since they're ahead, obviously. They had video showing tanks and armored vehicles, including a bulldozer, moving on a road near a fence in northern Gaza. They said IDF that the raid was limited, was large but limited in scope. It was a sweep operation intended to create better terms for ground operations if and when that comes. So there, it sounds like they're trying to get some things under control with regards to doing what they can, at least, if the Wall Street Journal reporting is right, to get things ready to go in case they do. And if the United States finally gets everything together and we do end up going in on the ground. So they said that they were just trying to, you know, clear some stuff out. They said that they were still looking at anti-tank guided missiles, etc. But this is, I don't know how much, because they can't really roll into a destroyed city with tanks. You do have to clear everything out. It gets a little bit Stalingrad-esque in terms of the ground, but definitely not the will or the motive. But it's... that, I mean, if there was anything that indicates that that's exactly what they want to do is a ground invasion, I mean, I think this just speaks further to it, which then tells me, suggests to me that there is a little bit more meat on the bone there with that Wall Street Journal story and U.S. preparedness than not. That's what I'm getting out of this and looking at this story. And so as this happens, the... I wanted to pull this up. Rashida Tlaib, because this story started coming out last night. This is pretty amazing. It's an independent entity. It's a news entity that reported that Rashida Tlaib, this is pretty crazy, that she has extensive fundraising ties to Hamas supporters, which I'm not surprised about. In 2015, she founded this group called Black for Palestine. She co-founded this group, and it was a very anti-Israel, very, very pro-Hamas group. And they worked with the Marxist-Leninist Popular Front for the liberation of quote-unquote Palestine, which is designated also as a foreign terrorist organization by the United States. And apparently it's called CanaryMission.org. And they focus on anti-Semitism on college campuses. But with this, they were looking at the Hamas activists, the Hamas associated activists that fundraised for her campaign. And they named three of them. It was her 2018 congressional campaign. One of them was Salah Sarsour, who was listed as an official Tlaib campaign on her official flyers, being the lead organizer of several events. He was given out his phone number for contact, etc. And apparently he is a Hamas activist who served 8 months in prison for his connections to the terror group, including one of the convictions was actually giving Hamas money. And then others, including the Rafiq Jabbar, who also hosted a major fundraiser for her and helped. Has been on record testifying that he distributed Hamas propaganda in the United States. He hosted a fundraiser for Tlaib in Chicago, and he's also a co-founder of CARE, that's the Council on American Islamic Relations. He's testified that he's directed Hamas front groups to promote the Hamas and their purpose in, quote, every way we can. And he's advocated for martyrdom. He's advocated for the killing of Jews. I mean, these are the people who worked on her campaign and raised tons of money for. Now it doesn't look so suspect how she's out there, or not suspect. Now it looks more, it makes sense now that she's out there defending Hamas the way that she does and goes after Israel. Now it starts to make sense when you look at their connections and you look at who's giving them money. And she also used their very, very pro-terror Facebook page in 2018 for election fundraising. She has done that. So there's how is that not a violation of any kind of ethics in the House?
That's different.
Maybe now, because now that we have a speaker, maybe we can censure her just repeatedly over and over again. I think that we should do that. I mean, ultimately, I think that's what needs to be done. Just that to start with. We have still a lot of stuff to hit because I want to go over a little bit in Maine's law, because now you're seeing everybody from Gavin Newsom. You're going to hear, obviously, from the president and vice president, who are going to be pushing all kinds of stuff on this. But Biden has already been pushing for an assault weapons ban. He's already come out and stated such. We're going to talk a little bit about Maine's law. We're going to set a new record straight on that. And again, this was a guy who was apparently involuntarily committed and had already threatened to shoot up his base. And some were saying that he has an arrest record. We'll see, though, because I would imagine that that would result in a dishonorable discharge if he did. Which also, if you, dishonorable discharge is also under 18 U.S.C. 922 G4. That's also a prohibited possessor that would establish you as a prohibited possessor.
What happens when we die? From Angel Studios, the force behind Sound of Freedom and The Chosen comes an unprecedented deep dive into the phenomena of near-death experiences in the new movie After Death. After Death makes a courageous venture into a hotly debated, mysterious subject by comparing near-death experience with cutting-edge scientific knowledge. Hear from experts in the fields of science, philosophy, and medicine, as well as firsthand experiences of people who have lived through death as they paint a fascinating picture of life in the next realm. This groundbreaking project responds to the soul's innate desire to find meaning in life and solace in the future. Come see it for yourself or pay it forward by providing a free ticket for others to see the film. Leave your preconceptions at the door and prepare for a never-before-seen glimpse into what the next life could entail in After Death, opening October 27th. Get your tickets today or pay it forward at angel.com/Dana. That's angel.com/Dana. After Death, the end is only the beginning. Rated PG-13.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
And you know that old remembrance promise, at the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them, period.
Did he just pull a Ron Burgundy?
Yes.
Again.
And read the period?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
It's our president.
Everything's a joke. You know what I want to do? There's this place that we have in our town. I like to purchase my own baked goods, or to make my own baked goods, not buy them. But they ought to advertise on the show for as much as we get them. It's the Bundt Cake Place. I don't want to say their name because you got to pay for that.
Pretty much already said.
I'm a capitalist. But I just want to go and get a whole bunch of them and just eat those. I mean, if the world's going to go to hell, why not just like that one lady, I'm just going to stay home and eat bread and desserts and get all fat and sassy. Why not just do that? Right? I mean, if the world's going to go to hell, why not just do that? Good heavens.
Period. Oh, wait.
You can't put it in there. Ron reads everything that you put in there. It's Ron Burgundy. Except Ron Burgundy couldn't he play the flute?
Yeah,
I'm going to stop right there because otherwise this joke is just never going to end.
And it's Ron Burgundy character seems smarter even than
the Biden
character we've got as
the
president.
Ron Burgundy character at least had some measurable skills. I don't know what skills Joe Biden has other than what? Grifton? Is that a skill or is that luck? I think people give him a pass now because he's old. I honestly think he tries to act old and more feeble than he really is. There should be like a test. How feeble are you? Let's just see. Should we feel sorry for you?
Like a literal presidential fitness test.
Why is it you have to take those in school, which right. I like meddled out every time. Like I was ace on that. Why, if it's the president, I just don't think you should call it that if the president of the United States can't even do it. You know, you got these old dudes out there. I'm just saying.
Make a valid point.
I'm super cynical. I think it's the weather here. It's been real goth here in Texas. nonstop rain. Everything's flooded. Texas isn't used to this much rain. I don't know what's happening. It's all weird. Everything's horrible. Kane and I have sinus pressure. We're complaining about it nonstop, like elderly people. It's just, it's got our president who reads the stuff you're not supposed to read on the teleprompter. Mass murderers in Maine, terrorists in college campuses, terrorists in Israel trying to kill Israelis.
It's only Thursday.
Yeah, it's only, I mean, you know, we at least made it to Thursday. For the love, we at least made it that far. So like I said, you know, just like go get some of the bunk cakes and just make some bread and desserts and get all fancy. I got to find that soundbite now because I have it in my head like one would have a song. So the latest with this main killer, I was reading Gavin Newsom's remark on this. Of course, they never waste a moment. Gruesome Newsom goes out and says, Republicans in Maine rejected a bill this year that would have required a waiting period for firearm purchases. They seriously could not fathom waiting 72 hours to buy a gun. Maine also does not ban assault weapons, require permits to carry a gun in public, require background checks on all gun sales. We need immediate action. We cannot sit around and wait for Congress. Well, that's... First off, what you're talking about is un-American. Gruesom Newsom, the waiting period, pray tell. And I asked this question. I said, how he was reportedly, again, involuntarily committed. So he was already technically a prohibited possessor. And he made threats about shooting up his base. Nobody knows how he got his guns, when he got his guns, if he got his guns legally, if he got his guns illegally, if he was on psychotropics, you know, how many times he's been committed. How would any new laws that Gruesome Newsom is proposing here would have stopped this guy from breaking all of the other laws? Right? I mean, think about it. You're not supposed to buy a gun on the black market illegally. You know, if you're a prohibited possessor, you're not supposed to go and obtain a firearm illegally. Hey, guess what? If you're not a prohibited possessor, you're not supposed to commit murder. Well, we need common sense murder laws. None of this makes sense. 72 hours, why would waiting? That doesn't do anything. If someone is hell-bent on mass murder, you think that they're going to just chill? No, it doesn't work. It doesn't work like that. We have a lot more on the way. Our second hour coming up. Stick with us.
What can you tell us about his background? I know Shimon had asked a second ago about the idea that, you know, he had voiced concerns about his own mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Had been committed, according to language in a police bulletin, to a mental health facility for weeks. How could someone that fits that profile still be in possession of semi-automatic weapons?
Well, I do think that the statutes around firearms and the possession of those are pretty complex. I know that we will be reviewing that information as we move forward, but that's not an answer that we're prepared to give today, because that leads to motive. If you're talking about behavioral health issues and how that impacts this situation, I would expect you'll hear back from us on that in the future.
So welcome back to the program. Top of this second hour, Dana Lash here with you. And that audio, that was the head of the Department of Public Safety in Maine, who is fielding a question from NBC. This was just a little bit earlier this was about the main killer. I don't like saying names and I don't like showing pictures, especially when they're still at large. And, you know, you never know what these people are coming across. You know, the copycat stuff and the stories about how they love watching coverage of their atrocities. I don't like to give any airtime to those people in terms of their name or image. But the Department of Public Safety was saying that, he was asked a good question. How is someone who, according to the BOLO, how is somebody who is involuntarily committed and reportedly sounds like he was violent? I mean, the guy threatened to shoot up his base before. How does somebody like that, first off, how is he still in good standing? He threatened to shoot up his National Guard base. Is he still there's a lot of questions here. And they said, well, we can't answer that right now, etc. Well, when can you answer it? Because you already have people wanting to push laws based on what we don't know. So, as I said, welcome back to the program. Horrible news coming out. 18 fatalities. At first, they were claiming 22. It's 18. And I'm thankful it's lower. It just shouldn't have to be any. And this person, they said that they're looking for, they said that the guy apparently, he was, their original analysis that they put out, they said he was a firearms instructor. Now they've revised that and said he wasn't a firearms instructor. He was believed to be in the Army Reserve. He, quote, recently reported mental health issues to include hearing voices and threats to shoot up the National Guard base. So he had multiple threats, apparently. He was telling people he heard voices, and he was committed. So if he was involuntarily committed, as I said last night, then he was not a legal possessor, number one. So he would not have been able to legally buy a firearm. He would not have been able to legally carry a firearm. But if he voluntarily committed himself, like if he of his own volition went into a mental health facility, that while that does get into a tricky area, it does not necessarily mean that you are a prohibited possessor if it is a voluntary commitment. But we don't know. We don't even know, because they have, so what Maine has they don't have a red flag law. It's a yellow flag law. So you have red flag laws, which are in 21 different states around the country. And I've been very, very critical of red flag law for a number of very good reasons. First and foremost is that the evidentiary standard to remove someone's natural right is lowered. I think it ignores all of the other legal pathways that we have in order to adjudicate someone mentally unfit, or as the legal term is, a mental defective, in order to be able to legally carry or purchase. What Maine has, they don't have a red flag, they have a yellow flag. Now, Maine's is different in that a lot of these other states, when you have a red flag law, it's usually what they call an ex parte process, meaning the person against whom the action is being taken is not even aware of what's happening. So, and then there's usually no mental health follow-up. And in many instances, these laws don't even have provisions for anyone to actually evaluate you or evaluate your mental health before this is enacted, against the individual in question. Maine apparently does require a medical personnel, like right off the bat, to evaluate and get involved. And that makes it a little bit different than some of these others. From what I understand, I'm still not pleased with the evidentiary standard, because a lot of it, they lower things from reasonable doubt to like suspicion or something like that. It's not uniform within any of the 21 states that have passed red flag law. So the yellow flag law, it's weird to say it like that, the yellow flag law, this was passed, signed into law, it was implemented in 2019, and the medical practitioner can get involved. Normally with red flag, the judge, well, a number of people can bring the case before the judge. The judge is ultimately the one who determines whether or not this individual is considered dangerous, a danger to themselves or others, and whether or not they should be rendered a penalty. And one of the reasons I always found red flag laws weird is because they are brought on the accusation that someone is a danger to themselves or others, and then their guns are removed, and then nothing else is done. So if they were going to stab someone to death, if they were going to run somebody over with their car, if they were going to do, hands, feet, or fists, which, by the way, kill more people than the firearms that they're talking about, with assault weapon bans in homicides. I mean, it doesn't actually remedy the issue of the individual being a danger to themselves or others. And in many instances, there's no legal requirement for follow-up for mental health issues, nor is there any kind of mental health professional involved. So it's almost like it betrays its stated purpose, because there's absolutely no action or follow-up to that. I mean, there was a case of a guy in California who had a red flag law. Their red flag laws were called on him. He had his guns taken away and he ended up stabbing his mom to death like the next day. So it doesn't actually stop the individual from being a danger to themselves or others. It just takes away one component. And that's not even the number one component in question, in terms of this and how these are used. The yellow flag law, you have the medical practitioner. I'm looking at the actual statute itself. So you have an actual mental health professional who gets involved. They evaluate the individual. all of this. And they, and there's actually, I will say with this, they actually do, they have within the statute some mental health aspect, whereas, like I've said, they, I don't see that in others. But this, the yellow flag law in Maine, I think this is the only state that has something like this. With the yellow flag law, the individual, if they are, they have to be, they, the mental practitioner who's evaluating the individual, if they find that the person is a danger to themselves or others, the way that they put it is a present, present a likelihood of foreseeable harm, then the law enforcement and the judge gets involved and they have their assessment and then they take that person into custody and then they determine probable cause, which is a higher evidentiary, I mean, it's a higher evidentiary standard, probable cause that they control or may have, you know, acquire a reasonable weapon, et cetera, et cetera. It gets in. So there's a number of different steps. Now, what we don't know is whether or not this guy's involuntary commitment did that. I mean, I'm just curious, was that, did that trigger the, this law? I mean, the, like I said, this law has been there since 2019. Did it trigger this law? I don't know. We don't, we just simply don't know about that. And at the press conference, it doesn't sound like they were going to take any of, they were going to answer that question. So it, if he did self-report mental health, if he did go and voluntarily commit himself, I mean, to an institution, was that before or after he threatened to shoot up an army base? Like, what, there's all of this stuff, because I'm trying to figure out at what point at that moment would him presenting a danger to himself or others factor in? And then at what point, I mean, it seems like if you're shooting up a base, the yellow flag law would have come into play there, right? If you're telling people you're going to shoot up your National Guard base, don't you think that the yellow flag law would have come into play? So that's what I'm saying. Did it, at what point, what did this happen? Is there anything that, because the longer this goes out, the longer that we don't know, and I get that they're still trying to find this guy and this guy's still at large, but you literally have people who are trying to push laws to disarm the type of people that this guy would love to kill more of. So that's why I think all of this is important. You've got people like Gruesome Newsom out there already calling for gun control laws. You've got the president of the United States saying that we have to pass an assault weapons ban, except for the fact that that never worked. It did not work the last time it was in effect. And I'm not the only person saying that. The very far left progressive Barack Obama's Department of Justice said that in a separate survey. The Rand Institute has said that. The CDC has even noted, they scrubbed it from their website, and as it came out, emails between themselves and gun control, because the CDC actually colluded with gun control groups, they actually even removed defensive gun usages from their website and from all their surveys where they had studied DGU, because it undermined gun controllers' advocacy. There are actual receipts on that. There are emails back and forth from just a couple of years ago. They actually colluded with the CDC. So you have all of these bad intent players that are involved in trying to limit law-abiding innocent people's rights. I think it's very important that we know all of this stuff as soon as possible. So this is why this is all incredibly important. So with this, when we get more information, we'll share it with you. But it sounds like this guy is, you know, I don't want to speculate too much about his background in that, because we just don't know. We just don't know. And I, but I do hope they catch him soon. In the meantime, you've had these people, like I said, they've wasted no time trying to immediately politicize this. I was sharing with you Newsom's thing, ban assault weapons, require permits to carry. If you, a permit to carry, you don't, if you're having to ask permission to exercise a right, it's not a right. Requiring background checks on all gun sales. We have background checks on gun sales. Even if it is an interstate legal sale of private property, it is still subject to federal oversight because there's a federal penalty if you violate it. So that's still even federally regulated. All of that. I mean, they're immediately trying to undermine Maine's law. They're immediately also trying to undermine I mean, really, your abilities and rights. They want to make this obviously nationwide. He says we need to amend the Constitution to prevent tragedies like this. Dude, I just, and you had the Giffords group out there, and I had responded to one of their things. They had said that, Maine, they got rid of, they were saying that Maine doesn't have background checks. They got rid of background checks. They said that, you know, they went with the 22 people were killed. It was 18. I mean, I don't want to pick with numbers, but I think accuracy is important for everything. And they said that our country is being held hostage by the gun lobby, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they were arguing that somehow they went after Mike Johnson and said that he voted against background checks on gun sales. No, that's not what he did. He voted against establishing a national registry. I'm going to talk about that coming up because I know we have headlines on the way. You know, I'm going to tell you the difference very easily between background checks and universal background checks. They're not the same. And we have background checks.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Interesting. So apparently a common fungus can trigger what's called a key player in Alzheimer's. They say statins are linked to Alzheimer's. But you have thoughts on this, Kane. You think that this is... I can't say what you think it is.
It's BS. That's what I think it is.
That's not what you wrote, though.
No, it isn't.
No.
But... yeah, this is the airwaves.
It's a link between a common fungus and Alzheimer's, though. It's Candida albicans. It enters the brain and it triggers mechanisms that aid in its clearance and it generates toxic protein fragments. Yeah.
So it's not a new fungus is basically what I'm saying, but Alzheimer's is relatively new when you look at the history of it in medicine. So please stop with this.
Yes, yes. It's fun science. Fake science. Fun science. Yeah, I'm just going to make stuff up. A man used a machete on a skateboarder that he thought was a fish, say police, in one of the stupidest stories ever. It's in Salt Lake, KSL. A man was accused of attacking a skateboarder with a machete because he thought the skateboarder was a fish. Ryan Davis, 23, was booked into Salt Lake County Jail. Aggravated assault. According to the affidavit, the dude was skateboarding on the sidewalk where people skateboard because they're people and they're not fish. Just before 1 a.m., when the man passed Davis, Davis just produced a large machete and swung it at the victim, striking him on the left forearm, causing a half-inch laceration. It's going to require stitches. And Davis says he stated that he was attempting to cause the victim harm because he thought the victim was a fish. Davis previously was convicted of 3 counts of attempted aggravated assault, where he approached 3 fast food employees and threatened them with a knife while demanding food. He was given credit for 42 days he had already served at jail and was placed on 2 years probation. So I just am trying to figure out the fish part. Like, how do you mistake a person for that? And then secondly, why is that scary to you to the point where you like roll out a machete? And third, who carries around a machete like that? You know, I'm just saying. $200,000, the theft of 2 million dimes from a truckload of coins that was at leaving from the U.S. Mint has left 4 people facing federal charges. It's not free change, although I am shocked that there is change still. There's coinage. I mean, I like that there's coinage, but it is, you know, it's kind of weird. Some people who are dumb are taking a survey saying that should Halloween always be the last Saturday in October? It should always be October 31st. Always stop it with this stuff. All right, we've got a lot more on the way. Stick with us.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
With Prime Minister Netanyahu, who obviously you've known for decades, and you had a very emotional trip there last week to Israel. Have you sought assurances from him that he will hold off on a ground invasion into Gaza until the safe release of the hostages can be assured? And of course, those include 10 unaccounted for Americans.
No. What I have indicated to him is that if that's possible to get these folks out safely, that's what he should do. It's their decision. But I did not demand it. I pointed out to him, if it's real, it should be done.
What? Biden saying that he didn't delay their ground invasion. This was in contradiction of this Wall Street Journal piece that came out yesterday, and we talked about it, wherein he it was suggested that the U.S. wasn't prepared, and we did not have any air cover at all whatsoever because for our assets, our troops that are in Kuwait, Iraq, etc. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lashier with you, bottom of this second hour. Whether or not, it just seemed like that was a little bit of an info battle there. But he says, oh, no, I did not demand the delay. Until the safe release of hostages. So what's the truth? I mean, I'm not inclined to necessarily believe Biden. I mean, this is, you know, President Laptop doesn't exist. McDaddy Shower. So he's got a long name. I don't necessarily trust him on that. So just FYI, I just don't. So, well, I mean, we had that big conversation. I don't want to go into it again. You can go back in the podcast archives. You can find us on YouTube or Facebook as well. But I just don't necessarily, I just wonder if how much of that is true, because it seems like they're at a state of readiness. I mean, they understand the ground that they're getting ready to go in. They understand the lay of the land, the tunnels of it, etc. So it just seems, you know, when is he going to be asked about this other big story that's making the rounds? I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic was granted a visa to the U.S. and he was granted taxpayer-funded protection. I've got a lot of questions on this. So this came out yesterday. It broke that the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic was granted a visa by our State Department and is currently in New York under the protection of U.S. taxpayers. The country that is essentially behind, you know, all of this. I'm curious as to how much protection he's allowed. So he's on our soil. So I guess they would assess what's needed and they protect him while he is on our soil. Why does he have to be here? He's at the UN and the United Nations, which I think is an entirely useless organization where tyrants pretend to be civilized. He's speaking to the UN. So because the UN is in the United States and we bankroll the UN, I mean, we pretend that everyone participates equally, but it's the United States that bankrolls it while all of these other countries bitch and moan that the United States is nation building and is involved in too many things. But at the same time, the United States is expected to give up prime real estate in Manhattan and the United States is expected to fund the UN and the United States is expected to pay all the UN's bills. And the United States is looked at as the sugar daddy of every other nation in the world when it comes to taking care of their needs. But yet, how dare the United States get involved and tell someone that they shouldn't or should not do something? I'm so tired of this. So this guy's there. There'd have been a great opportunity to take him out, you know. Just saying, why is he here under our protection? Why are we doing this? Do you realize what fools we look like? You realize what fools we look like? How stupid this is? And I can already hear a couple of the drive-bys asking, Dana, he has to be able to come to the UN. We have to be able to have the UN. That presupposes that there is something worth having in the United Nations. There isn't. It is an entirely useless organization. They don't do anything. They've never prevented anything. They've prolonged war. They've dragged it out. All of the people who couldn't cut it in the real world of MREs and combat, they go and push pencils at the United Nations. That's what they do. And the people who justify tyranny, they go to the United Nations. That's what they do. You have the United Nations Security Council. You have the United Nations, what is it? They have a council on rights that on it sits like countries like China. I'm not kidding you. It's the biggest joke in the world. It's a participation trophy. And we give taxpayer our tax dollars. We work. How many months out of the year do we work before we actually start keeping our money? It's an, what, 3 months?
Probably more than that.
Yeah, 3 or 4 months. Yeah. We work and send all our money to the government before we can start keeping some of that check. We send our first fruits to Satan Sam, basically, the IRS. We send our first fruits over to the IRS, an unconstitutional entity of professional bullies who steal everyone's money. And to what end? To provide taxpayer-funded protection to Iran's leader? Hussein Amir Abdulhalin. And he was here meeting. There's video of him here. He's here at the UN. We're protecting him. You know, what an oddly timed visit, too, by the way. After all of this, everything that's happening, what an oddly timed visit. Very interesting. I mean, why are we still pretending to be nice to them, by the way? I mean, he's given a visa to come into our country and taxpayer-funded protection. Do you think that they would do the same thing? to our leaders over in Iran? I'm curious. I mean, he actually just arrived. When did he got there yesterday. He arrived yesterday. He's staying at the Millennium One UN. Wall Street Journal said he was participating in planning meetings for Hamas's attack on Israel. What's weird is that the U.S. had already refused a visa to his predecessor, which I don't understand then why he gets one. His predecessor, Javad Zarif, in 2020, was trying to come get a visa to come into the United States, and the United States refused it. But why does this guy get one? I mean, they've been accused of being involved in planning the attack. He's got a big old grin on his face. Just want to slap it right off. Just curious why. Just why. A lot of questions here. So taxpayer funded. That's what we're so glad that we work so hard so we can pay for the security of this guy who would kill us in a second. For the state of a fake diplomacy with us. What this administration engages in diplomacy with the entirely wrong people. They are tone deaf. Let me give you another example. This has to do with colleges and universities. So a few things here. Yesterday, well, actually not yesterday, we've heard how Karine Jean-Pierre, she's come out, 2 days in a row talking about how, well, we have to reach out. Or we can't just be hate. We can't have Muslim hate, anti-Islamic, whatever. Basically acting like the people who were in the streets chanting genocidal refrains about rivers to seas. We have to, you can't get mad at those people. That might be anti-Islamic or Islamophobia. The White House has increased outreach to Muslim and Arab Americans in the face of criticism to the Israel-Gaza war response. I don't know if you've seen this story. This is NBC. It's what they reported just the other day. This is pretty something. They've increased their outreach, according to the story, to Arab Americans and Muslim Americans in the face of criticism to the Hamas's attack on Israel. And aides say that they're worried that Biden hasn't shown enough empathy for Gazan civilians and a Muslim community facing anger at home. I don't know anyone no one is just like blanketly angry at Muslims. What a stupid accusation. People are justifiably angry at Muslims who are in the streets protesting in favor of Hamas, or really anyone who is, regardless of whether or not they're Muslim. Anyone who's going out into the street talking about martyrdom or chanting from the river to the sea is getting, and justifiably so, scorned. They said dissent, according to this NBC piece, was sprouting even inside of the White House, where aides are worried that Biden hasn't shown enough empathy for Gazans and the Muslim community that's facing so much anger. And that he is, they want him to undertake a vigorous outreach effort. I don't think vigorous and Joe Biden are words that go together. They feel like they're being scapegoated for the atrocities Hamas has committed. No. You are culpable if you are defending Hamas. Yes. Yes, you are. We're not going to sit here, and I'm not allowing people to play the victim when they are the aggressor. And so I think that they don't like that Biden has said that Israel should be able to fight back. I don't think that they like that. Well, Hamas definitely doesn't. Hamas apologists don't either. But what gets me is that, so you have the White House that's undertaking outreach efforts, but parents who protested legit actual pornographic graphic novels in middle school were put on FBI watch lists. Jewish people have been the most targeted group in the United States for the past 30 years annually, per FBI uniform crime data. But there are no increases in outreach for Jewish Americans. In fact, it has been for the past 30 years, Jewish people, the aggression against them in the United States has increased. This is measurable, whether it's like vandalism, crimes, attacks, things like that. There's no outreach for them. Do you know that Cooper Union Jewish students were locked in a library by security for protection against angry pro-Hamas protesters? This took place yesterday. Cooper Union College in New York City, Jewish students had to be forcibly barricaded into the college library by campus security for their own protection because angry pro-Hamas rioters were very, very violent. Crowds were forming, and they were screaming from the river to the sea, screaming genocidal chants. I mean, the students looked terrified in the video. And they were locked in. There's like, you know, a tiny little handful of them. And there's a whole riot of people outside the double doors. I mean, there's like, what, a whole five Jewish students. And then all these other, and they were screaming invectives. And they were saying resistance is justified. They were defending the atrocities. That sounds pretty damn terrifying. I mean, these students couldn't even leave the building after the rioters got inside. And they were, again, with the river to the sea stuff and all of that. I mean, it is amazing to me. You had a Los Angeles man that was arrested after breaking into the home of a Jewish family. He tried stabbing them to death while he screamed Free Palestine. This is according to KTLA, Studio City. The mother, a very heavily 9 months pregnant mother, was the one who first saw him. They have four other children. The husband fought with him while she called 911 and protected their kids. And after the husband eventually got him outside and into the backyard. He was fighting with them the whole time. Officers arrived. They found the guy armed with a knife. And he was screaming, Free Palestine. And he told police that he targeted them because they were Jewish. He screamed at them that they were Jewish, and that's why he was targeting them. But the White House is increasing outreach to Muslim and Arab Americans. Because people who might be out cheering Hamas, well, we wouldn't want them. Speaking of which, remember Harvard, and we're going to talk about this coming up with the college rot. They made a task force to fight back on behalf of students who have been cheering on Hamas and terrorizing other Jewish students to defend them against being fired for ripping down posters of kidnapped Israelis. Or for screaming that resistance was justified or bless the martyrs or whatever the other nonsense they say. Wouldn't you hear about this? But yet, you know, the White House is making a task force for, you know, Arab Americans, nothing for the community that's been number one targeted for the past 30 years. We got a lot more still to discuss.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right. So first up, a Florida man hides a gator in a garage. He said he didn't want someone to eat it. I mean, I just don't think people go running around randomly eating gators like that. Other people's pets or something. But, you know, I could be wrong. I don't know. So first up, Florida man, he said he did. And it was in a 35-gallon aquarium in his garage. And Florida wildlife officer, Fish and Wildlife, responded to the Orlando home. 28-year-old Christopher Ablard. He goes, I love how they just say, an FWC officer responded to an Orlando home where he questioned 28-year-old Christopher Ablard if there was an alligator in or outside the home. The officer said that Christopher grinned at the question and then opened a garage, revealing a 3.5-foot American alligator in a 35-gallon aquarium tank. The man told the officer he didn't know anything about the gator, which he said was his dad's. He also showed off five boa constrictors, but he said that the reason that he keeps them in the tank is he didn't want someone to run it over, pick it up, take it home, and eat it. So they had to seize it because that's like a first-degree misdemeanor. You just keep a gator. I didn't know you just can randomly keep a gator. I mean, this is America. A Florida man threatens to break an officer's throat for calling his wife about his calling out his wife over her belligerent pool behavior. Now, the guy's last name is Parrot. Lyle Parrot. He is a resident of the Villages. He's a villager. He was arrested like from Minecraft over the weekend for threatening police officers. 64-year-old Lyle Parrot. He was in a drunken brawl at the pool. They said that he was smoking and his wife was being drunk, and he told an officer, quote, I'm going to break your throat. So he was totally arrested and didn't break anyone's throats. Stick with us.
But aren't these hostages in jeopardy if there is a ground invasion?
You want to make a speech?
Now, look, obviously they're in jeopardy. The question is whether or not there's any way of getting them out. And if we can get them out, we should get them out.
Okay. What is he? You want to make a speech? He's asking a question. Good grief. Like, what is your deal? I'm telling you what. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. And top of this third hour already. And that's, I mean, we still don't have, it's been how many, I'm trying to think how many days since we were talking about this, what, 22 days, I think, 23 days? And still people being held hostage, telling you. And whether or not the administration, they haven't really given any, the most that they've said is to dox our spec ops team. So that's, you know, the spec ops team is the one that got ended up, they put their photo all over social media, and then they're like, oops, sorry, bad. So again, welcome, top of this third hour, listen coast to coast, watch the simulcast of the show, YouTube, Facebook, channel 347 on DirecTV. And in addition to this, we've been watching the latest with Maine, the Maine killing. And I am, Lorraine noted that this individual who had been, it just said committed, and they've been very cagey with how they said this. And I noticed this last night. They said committed and not admitted, because saying that someone is committed to a mental health institution suggests that it was involuntarily done. And the Associated Press said that he had been acting erratically when his unit was training at the U.S. Military Academy in West Point. And this was in New York. And they said that commanders became concerned about his safety. They asked for police to be called. And then at that point, he was taken to the hospital for evaluation. That does suggest that it sounds like he was involuntarily committed. But it's weird that the media doesn't just come out and say that. I mean, it is interesting to note what they rush out to push as a narrative and what they won't push as a narrative. So they'll say that, they'll suggest and they'll intimate all day long that it's, you know, law-abiding gun owners are somehow responsible or this politician is responsible. But when it comes to the murderer, oh my goodness, if he was involuntarily committed, he was just committed. They'll say that. That's a cop-out way of saying it. It's just weird to me, very weird to me. Now, I had asked earlier, so if he had done this in New York with Maine's yellow flag law, New York has red flag law. So it didn't trigger the yellow flag law, apparently, in Maine, because he was in New York at the time. But because this was just over the summer, why then did they use red flag? Was it, and the article doesn't really get into this, did they invoke red flag in New York? I'm just curious. Did they, because, and they even made it more, they've done even more with red flag, just even, I think, over spring. I was looking at my notes on this. So I'm just, is there no record of that? I mean, curious, is there none? Because with red flag laws in New York, they could have, I mean, you can, this is one of the things they were fighting over with SCOTUS. I mean, Kathy Hochul was saying, oh, well, SCOTUS is going to upend our red flag laws, etc. You know, all of this stuff, saying all these things. There's legitimate issues with the flag that they have. Their red flag law went into effect in 2019 also. The yellow flag for Maine also went into effect in 2019. And whereas Maine, their yellow flag law, one of the first things that they do is they have a mental health professional involved. I'm not saying that I agree with their law. I'm just saying one of the things that they do differently from the other 21 states that have red flag laws is that a lot of these states do not at all whatsoever. I've read every one of these laws. They don't have a mental health professional at all involved for any evaluation, which floors me. Because if you're really, let's just assume that, you know, somebody supporting red flag law because they really do think that this is the best way to prevent someone who's a danger to themselves or others from hurting themselves or others. Well, if it is a mental health issue, why would you not have a mental health professional involved to determine the severity or the likelihood or give some sort of predictive insight into this individual's behavior, right? I mean, you do that for everything. Why would you not do that for something as serious as this? If you're talking about other people's lives, why would you not have a mental health professional involved? So Maine has one. Others do not. New York does not. So if this guy was in New York, training in New York, when it sounds like he was involuntarily committed, was this, did they invoke a red flag law, number one, or their ERPO law that they had passed in 2019? Because that's also different in New York, because they have any, it could be a past or current spouse. It could be like a whole host of people. In Maryland, it is police only. In New York, it can literally be like anybody. I mean, it could be anybody. And then they have police come out to determine based on the ask, and that's all an ex parte process, meaning if I don't like you, I could go to the court and I could petition, and then I could say, this person's a danger to themselves, etc. Law enforcement goes and checks it out. There's no mental health evaluation. And so I just wonder, did they use red flag for that? That's something that needs to be asked. I liked the questions, and this rarely happens. When they had the first press conference, the public, I didn't get a lot of information from the public safety dude. There was another law enforcement guy who was answering questions who I thought the media actually were asking questions that I would ask. I was shocked. Kane, how many times have I ever said, hey, get me these two cuts from this press conference? Those questions were, I've never done that.
Right.
I mean, they were legitimate questions. And they had no answers for those. So I'm curious then, if they invoke red flag for New York, that'll come up. If he was involuntarily committed in New York, that'll come up. And no matter where he's, in which state that he's a resident, it doesn't matter, even though Maine has yellow flag and New York has red flag, that's federal oversight. So he'll be a prohibited possessor no matter the state in which he's resident. So I have more questions now. I have even more questions. What then becomes, because this sounds so much like Sutherland Springs to me. In Sutherland Springs, the murderer in that case was with Air Force, and there was a suit that had been settled, actually, on behalf of the victim's families on this. The guy in Sutherland Springs had domestic violence convictions. Now, that is it's considered a disqualifying offense. There are certain things that you can do that will disqualify you in the eyes of the law. And again, whether you agree with all of it or not is irrelevant. This is what the law is. They tell you they need these laws to protect you, but then the laws don't protect you. It's a disqualifying offense that makes someone ineligible to purchase or carry. And what happened is that this was not reported to NICS. It wasn't reported. So when this guy went to go buy a gun in Sutherland Springs, he was able to buy his gun because it came back clean. He didn't even have to lie. He did it, and it didn't register. Now, I don't know. So if he had been, now this is where we get into the state reporting. Because one of the things that I have said is that states, it's how much they choose to report into the system. So you have the National Crime Information Center. The NICS is the background check system. NICS pulls from the National Crime Information Center. There's like seven different categories of ineligibility. So if you commit offense that makes you ineligible to purchase or carry, that is logged by the National Crime Information Center. One of those things is if you are adjudicated, the legal term is mental defective. If you are adjudicated a mental defective and you are considered ineligible to purchase or carry, you therefore are classified as a prohibited possessor. That is supposed to be recorded or reported to NCIC that NICS will check. If you fill out your form when you go to purchase a firearm, your 4473, and it should pull from those prohibited categories and check them. Now, there's, you know, a lot of people, there's some faulty things with the background check system. I mean, employment background check systems are actually more strenuous than these are. John Lott has a great whole bit on that gets into how insane that is. But not every state actually voluntarily complies. There are states that just don't submit all of their cases of people adjudicated mentally unfit to National Crime Information Center. So did New York make that mistake? Is that what happened here? States can and do make mistakes. The Charleston murderer, the guy in Charleston who shot up the church of people, that was literally, and the FBI came out and said it. This is when James Comey was FBI director. They had to release this big old thing because it was a woman who messed up the counties in the state in which this all happened. If you're simply charged with a felony, you are rendered ineligible until which time you, in a court of law, you're exonerated, or, you know, if you're convicted, you go to jail. But she messed up the counties, and because of that, there was an error that allowed that guy's purchase to go through. So people can and do make mistakes. States can and do make mistakes. Did someone just not report this? So when he goes back to Maine, where did he purchase his firearms? That's going to be incredibly important, too, because everyone's like, Maine doesn't have a waiting period. Well, you're assuming that he purchased in Maine. Did he maybe purchase in New York? Nobody knows. There's a lot of assumptions that people have here, but what I'm seeing that is uniform throughout is that none of this stuff worked. We're going to continue to follow this. I'm scheduled to join my friend Jesse Waters on this tonight, but we'll see. Because he's still at large, which is crazy to me. John Kirby is taking questions now at the podium. And he's saying, too, that talking about you can't really take Hamas's claims. I can't believe I'm going to say this. Because it's basic. Wait a minute. Now I'm mad at myself. Do I want to give, like, I don't want to backpat over basic stuff that you should be doing. You should know that you should not take Hamas's claims as gospel truth, right? Why am I congratulating him on doing the bare necessity then? No, wait, stop. I'm not giving credit where due because there's no credit due here, right?
It's even worse because they keep affirming the need for a two-state solution. So,
which Hamas does not want that.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Do they not? How many times Hamas got so tired of denying that they are saying that they don't want a two-state solution, they put it in their charter. Yes, it's like literally there. I've read it for you. I have it quoted and linked on Substack. I've sent it out to subscribers. They absolutely do not. They don't want it. I'm just curious because did they not know that? Coming up, Congressman Chip Roy joins us on all the latest with the House because we have a new speaker finally. I know. Does that mean we're going to get stuff done? Maybe. Maybe. We'll see on that.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right. So there was one arrested following a bomb threat in food delivery at Oregon State University with robots. This is such a weird story. So the school tweeted that the food delivery robots had been, they were apparently wanting to bomb the food delivery robots. And they said that they were isolated in a safe location and a technician was looking them over. They said that it was all related to the robot food delivery system. They tweeted, OSU tweeted that the emergency was over and that people could resume normal activities. I'm telling you, man, it looks like a little cooler on wheels and it rolls up and it delivers for you your food is apparently what it does. I don't know. Would you trust that? I don't trust I don't trust no robot. I don't trust none of them. What? I don't trust no robot. Mm-mm. So the off-duty pilot who tried to shut off the plane's engine mid-flight, apparently the investigation now reveals that he was on shrooms. He admitted to taking shrooms. He said it was only 2 days before the flight. 44-year-old Joseph Emerson, he was in the cockpit of the plane as an authorized occupant. And he tried to unsuccessfully disrupt the engines halfway through the flight, according to the probable cause affidavit. And he was in a courtroom on 83 counts of attempted murder, a single count of endangering an aircraft. He pled not guilty. I don't think that's going to work very well. But yeah, he apparently was on mushrooms. So why was he even allowed in the cockpit in the first place? What are you gonna do? Let's see here. This message in a bottle was found 27 years later. Nobody cares. Hurricane Otis weakens. Heavy rains and flash floods batter southern Mexico. Is that where we're getting this nonstop rain here in Texas? Holy cow. Stick with us. Congressman Chip Roy up next.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The House has a new speaker who he said he's ready to get to work and to find common ground. Now is the time. Now is the time to find common ground. Let's work together to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Let's work together to enact universal background checks, require safe storage of guns, and keep guns out of the hands of criminals and dangerous individuals who have no business being armed with a weapon of war.
Well, weapons of war built this country. That's KJP. Who is saying, oh, we got a new House Speaker. She's thrown it. She's for on behalf of Biden. She's throwing it down to Republicans saying, well, look, we got a new speaker. So here's a list of things we want. And, you know, they're going to follow up with demands for an assault weapons ban with, oh, we got to have that Ukraine funding. They're going to attach that to Israel. And then they're going to want all of their budgetary stuff. They're going to want more government spending. They're going to want blank checks, everything. I kind of get the sense that they're not going to get it. Just from this speaker. So let's get some insight on this, because we know who Mike Johnson is on paper. I've never met him, but let's talk to people who actually know him. Our awesome representative from Texas, Chip Roy. Always good to see you, Congressman. Thank you so much. By the way, I love the art in your office. I love it. I love when you're in this corner because I love the background that you have. First off, tell us about, I mean, this has to be a major relief. I mean, it took for forever, but we finally got a House Speaker. Is this the outcome that you wanted?
Well, Dana, yeah, great to be on, and I do. I'm proud of my little Texas corner here, Austin. You know, great live music capital. Willie's behind me. I usually
Oh, I didn't even see that. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. 4th of July picnic. So, got to represent. It's fine, and not exactly a bastion of conservatism in the music scene in Texas, but it's great music. So, and I've got some really good conservative friends in music that love to talk to me about it, but. Look, Mike Johnson is a man of impeccable character. You saw it in his speech at the rostrum there on the floor of the House. And what the American people need to know, the speech he gave there, he wrote it out and tightened it up a little bit, but he gave effectively the same speech with no notes from his heart the night before among Republicans in our conference meeting when we came to that conclusion late that night. Because it's who he is. He's a constitutionalist. He believes in God. He believes that Jesus is his Lord and Savior. He believes in the founding principles of this country. He believes America is exceptional. He's a proud father of, I think, 5 with his beautiful wife. And he's from Northwest Louisiana, where my mom's from. My mom's from a town in the district he represents. And so Mike's a friend. He was someone that I've worked with closely on the Judiciary Committee. We don't always agree on a number of different issues, but that's okay. I mean, that's what we do in a republic. And so to answer your question, I think Mike's the right guy for the moment. He's well-liked and respected across the conference. And here's something that you need to know that's a good thing. Right now over in the Senate, they've been having meetings today. And I have it on good authority that a lot of the folks in the Senate were saying, wait, who is that? Who is Mike? And the reason that's important is because what happened this week was we broke the back of the entitlement establishment culture that believes that just because they are the ones that have been out doling out the money and doing all the power broker stuff, or they've had a position, that they're the ones that get to make all the decisions. And guess what? This is a new day. It may not be readily apparent tomorrow. We may not get all the wins we want tomorrow or the next day, but we are changing this town. And I think now we're setting up the fight that is going to be really serious over the coming weeks. They want to jam us with this massive omnibus supplemental bill. They want to jam us with a big omnibus spending bill in December. And I believe that Mike will stand with us and with conservatives to tell them to pound sand. But we got a lot of work to do in the coming weeks.
You're talking with Congressman Chip Roy. I know he's part of the House Freedom Caucus. He's also, the Rules Committee or something to that effect. He's on base. The way it was described to me is that he's in a couple of different factions, which speaks volumes about some of the skills that he's going to need to get everybody together.
So Mike is, he's actually not in the Freedom Caucus, but Mike was the former executive director of the Republican Study Committee, which is kind of the center right block in the Republican Conference. He was the vice chairman of the Republican Conference, which is kind of the very low man on the totem pole of the leadership infrastructure. But importantly, he's a core and central member of the Judiciary Committee, working for Jim Jordan, the chairman of the Subcommittee on the Constitution. He is somebody who is on armed services. He's a deep understanding of our national security, deep understanding of the law and our respect for the rule of law. And he's been out there leading on a lot of different conservative principles over the years that he's been in Congress. But the most important thing right now is that he's going to hopefully putting together good staff and bringing the right people in the room to figure out how to get this done. Because you and I have talked about this before. We get zero help from Democrats on any of the issues that any of your listeners care about. I cannot overstate that enough. Zero help. Anybody who goes out and says anything about border security or talking about limiting spending or talking about making sure our country is secure, standing with Israel, it is almost entirely lip service by the Democratic Party. So we're left with 221 Republicans figuring out how to do something to try to fight to save this country with Democrats in charge of the Senate and the White House and no Democrats in the House willing to work with us on anything meaningful to limit spending, secure our border, make sure our military is strong and not being destroyed through social engineering. And so that's the tough job that Mike has. It was a tough job for Kevin. It would have been a tough job for anybody, and it will be a tough job for Mike. But Mike has something that has been sorely lacking, and that is a fresh perspective that isn't the next man up on the in the game of the establishment here in Washington.
Yeah, it's interesting because he seemed to come out of nowhere. And a lot of people, I mean, we've heard of him and we kind of were familiar with his record. I mean, obviously he's in Congress. I heard of who he was familiar with his record. I have some friends out in Louisiana that seem pleased by him. They're happy with his representation. But he's not somebody I followed. I definitely didn't have him on my bingo card for this. That's what was so surprising. I mean, his name comes out of, you know, right field. I'm like, where is this happening at? Well, this Mike Johnson, it's him. But I think, just as you were saying, that underscores that's not the list of usual suspects. Not to use that as a pejorative, but, you know, it wasn't the list of people that we were expecting.
Yeah, and look, I mean, understand when you've got your list of usual suspects who are the people that are in this town,
right,
that are in the leadership positions and they're loved by K Street, or they're the ones that, oh, they're the ones that can do this, Chip. Don't you understand? They've got the team. They've got the expertise. They've got the experience. Mm-hmm. They know everybody. They can do it. That's code for, hey, we can use them. We, the establishment in this town, we can work with them. And then they look at someone like me and they'll go, there's going out there and we're out on the tip of the spear out here trying to go fight and get information to people, call balls and strikes. Well, guess what? You're going to ruffle some feathers when you do that. When you go in and you go down to the floor and you say, you know what? That bill is garbage and I'm not supporting it. I'm not going to allow you to do that. And they go, wait, how dare you, young man? You can't do that. And so these are the things you have to balance. Mike is frankly kind of a cross section there, in which Mike has worked with the team, and he was the vice chair of the conference. He ran the Republican Study Committee, put a lot of good policies out. But he's also been out there working with people like us when we're out there on the tip of the spear. And we all have our different roles, right? There was the Patrick Henrys and there were the James Madisons. And so we all have to kind of figure out how this will play out. And I'm happy to continue to be at the tip of the spear because, frankly, ain't no time to waste. And we got to get out there and get the job done.
Well, just for future arguments, though, if we find ourselves in this, he already knows where I'm going. I can tell by expression on his face. If we find ourselves in this position again, Congressman Roy, can you just nix all of it and just say, you know what? I'm going to be speaker. Don't even say I'm not even going to nominate myself. I'm going to be speaker. You're going to vote for me. That's the end of it. And just get it done with.
Yeah, well, Dana, you know what the answer is. Mike Johnson is our speaker.
I know, but just saying, like, you know, things happen. Things can change. After that, in the future, I'm just saying, will you be open to just solving all the problems and just getting it over with?
So, Dana, when you take a massive pay cut and come in as my communications director, you come and advise me what my answer is.
That would be a nightmare for you. I appreciate you at least entertaining the idea. All right. But now we got business because we're looking at the future of a Republican controlled House. It's still a small amount of control, just a few seats that by which Republicans control. Yep. Is this going forward? What's the game plan? Because, you know, we're looking at another shutdown. We're going into election season, going into the holidays. People get resentful. What's the game plan?
Yeah, well, first of all, the most important thing we need to do is stop the ridiculous Biden administration and Senate Democrat, along with Senate Republican, play to try to jam the House with a big, what they're calling an omnibus supplemental bill, which would be Israel, yes, but Ukraine, Taiwan, and a bunch of money for the border, which will do nothing but process more people and not actually secure the border. They're talking about almost $100 billion. That is insane. We must oppose it. I believe we will oppose it. I believe the speaker will oppose it. I'm encouraging the speaker to oppose it. And instead, we should send over a Israel-only bill that is paid for, because just color me crazy, I just think maybe Republicans should pay for these things and go cut bad programs or existing dollars and say, you know what? We need to help our friends with Israel. Cut this bad program. Let's go help Israel.
Yeah.
But then let's set the stage for the next round, which is, what are we going to do when we get to the government funding issue on November 17th? Let's figure out what our plan is going to be. We're having those conversations now. It's not easy because we're up against the time, right? We got about 3 weeks left to go figure that out. And so we got to do that. And then we need to make sure that we're being very clear about Ukraine. We will not move anything for Ukraine. In my view, we should not, unless it is transparent, fully accounted for in terms of what has been spent before, with a clear mission of what we're trying to accomplish, doled out over time to the extent that there is any money at all tied directly to HR2 and border security measures, and a complete halt to the releases of people into the United States. You cannot have money flowing to Ukraine if we're not securing our border. If any money flows to Ukraine at all, which should only occur if they come and show us how it's in our national security interest and how the dollars are being used to actually accomplish the objective.
Exactly, which we haven't. We should allow, like, if Taiwan wants to buy, you know, armament from us, we should sell it to them. That could, like, go towards paying for some of Israel's, some of their aid. Congressman Chip Roy, always appreciate the candor. Good to see you, my friend. And thanks for fighting the good fight.
Thanks, Dana, Santa, Chris, and look forward to seeing you soon. Take care.
Will do. Thanks so much, sir.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
John, the president said that if Iran or its proxies attacked U.S. troops, that we would respond. So what is he waiting for exactly?
He did say that.
Where's the response?
He said that. And he said that we will...
Heeding the warning is the response?
Jackie, come on now.
It's not a question.
I'm not going to telegraph punches here from the podium. We have responded and retaliated in the past quite aggressively. In fact, back in March, and as the president said, we will not hesitate to protect our troops and our facilities, but we're going to do it at a time of our choosing and a manner of our choosing. And the decision to do it, if we do it, is his as commander-in-chief and his alone.
Now, I will say, Kirby has had some misses, and he got one hit. This soundbite that I just saw that just is up, he was being asked by, and this is a little bit ago, they're having a DOD presser now, but he was asked about the confidence in the numbers that Hamas had been giving out, and he doubled down and was like, he slammed Hamas. Listen to this. This was a very interesting exchange.
And John, so besides saying that he doesn't have confidence in these numbers, the president went further to say that innocents will die and that this is the price of the war. You also said that.
I have indeed.
Yeah. Don't you think this is insensitive? There being very harsh criticism about it. For example, the Council of American Islamic Relations said it was deeply disturbed and called on the president to apologize. Would the president apologize and does he regret saying something like that?
What's harsh? Is the way Hamas is using people as human shields. What's harsh is taking a couple of hundred hostages and leaving families in anxious waiting and worrying to figure out where their loved ones are. What's harsh is dropping in on a music festival and slaughtering a bunch of young people just trying to enjoy an afternoon. I could go on and on. That's what's harsh. That is what's harsh. And being honest about the fact that there have been civilian casualties and that there likely will be more is being honest, because that's what war is. It's brutal, it's ugly, it's messy. I've said that before. The president also said that yesterday. Doesn't mean we have to like it. And it doesn't mean that we're dismissing any one of those casualties. Each and every one is a tragedy in its own right. And each and every one we should try to prevent. And that is why we're in close contact with our Israeli counterparts to do everything we can to help them minimize the risk to civilians that are in harm's way.
And he says that he went on because he goes, we know that there are thousands waiting to leave Gaza writ large, and Hamas is preventing them from doing it. That is what is harsh. Wow. Kane,
I agree
with him.
I know. I didn't expect him to say it like that.
I never expected to agree with him. And I agree with him there. That is, I mean, he slammed that reporter and her stupid question. Oh my gosh. Well, crazier things have happened. We have to have that type of response. And we need to have people stop idealizing what they think conflict is supposed to look like. That's how people get killed. Those type people who think like that reporter get people killed. Mm-hmm. This is war. War is war. War is hell. And there are some very difficult decisions made, and none of them were made by Israel. This is what Hamas chose. That's harsh. Instead of living in peace, they chose this. Instead of allowing people to live peacefully, they chose this. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
It is our commander-in-chief. You can hear me smiling, can't you?
I can. Yeah, I knew you're going to.
We did this earlier today, but it's worth repeating. This is Biden who, is quite literally reading. Listen to this.
You know, that old remembrance promise. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them, period.
Period. Look. There's one part where it's like, yeah, that's funny. I'm laughing because
it's Ron Burgundy.
Absurdity. But then it's a realization that he's our president. Boy. And this is what the world sees every single day. Every single day.
So much inspires so much confidence.
So much.
All the confidence. Folks, we made it to Friday. Hopefully there's going to be some better news about apprehending that main murderer. We'll bring you all the latest. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Chapter and Verse. Some really good stuff that's been coming out there all this week. And Lorraine has some great pieces there. So make sure you check it out. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow. Scheduled to be on Fox tonight. Watch my Facebook page for details on that. Have a great night. Back behind the mic with you tomorrow.